All right, so someone wants to talk about beer. What's going on with beer?
Adam, what are you drinking?
I'm a beer drinker. I love beer. And I'm always up for whatever different tap, you know, whatever brews on tap. And I saw this. I was like, oh, this is interesting.
What, Hitachino?
Yeah, Hitachino. And I'd never heard about it before. This was like 2000, like 8 or 9.
Oh, it must have been super popular back then because Hitachino looks like it's like hand knit. You know, yeah, with that little
You would think, but like no one knew about it. It was only a few bars.
It's a premium Japanese craft beer, basically, is what you're talking
about,
right?
Yeah, it's like probably handmade by like, you know, like ninjas or samurais or something. I don't know.
The secret is that it's a super refined product, and if we drill down into who's actually making it, it's going to be the super nondescript guy wearing like a scruffy white shirt. You totally walk by him on the street and never know.
Probably, and he's like a master craftsman.
Yeah, right? And then you talk to him, and he's like, "This is my mission in life." And you suddenly feel super ashamed of yourself.
This whole thing is fucking racist, but continue.
It's purposefully racist. That's why I went there. Uh-huh. But okay, anyway.
I'm Korean.
It's either Jiro, a ninja, or a samurai that makes this beer, is what you're saying. So,
That's what I said.
Basically, yeah.
You know what? Okay, here's Asian beer supremacy for you, okay? If you go to like a Japanese bar in Manhattan and you go like a proper one and they have like a proper Sapporo machine, it's not just a pull draft, it's a fucking machine, okay? Oh. And it's got two levers for one beer. The first lever is to draft the beer, and the second lever gives you nothing but head. It's got a head lever.
Foam.
They spiral it into like a milkshake thing. And then you get the perfect amount of spirally foam. And it's that thick, tiny, tiny bubble foam that doesn't dissipate. It stays there for the entire drink. And then here's something that I went to Soju House in K-Town. They serve a frozen Sapporo.
It's the same thing.
It comes. Have you had that? How did they do that? It's got.
I think it's nitrogen. That's what gets the uniform creamy. The creamy head.
That's the only way they could freeze it.
Yeah. So it lowers the temperature a little bit more than you would get with just the water in the alcohol or with even carbon dioxide. So the nitrogen is what does it. And it's almost this like cream.
Yes.
You know, it's not there, it's like, you know,
it stays together.
There. Yeah.
That's cool.
Do you guys hear that wailing in the back?
A little bit, yeah.
Is that Coco?
That's a peacock.
Oh, it's a peacock.
Yeah, that thing that sounds like it's like just wailing. Yeah, that's a peacock.
So there are wild peacocks that sort of just like roam the yard in San Gabriel Valley.
Do they like beer? They're terrorists.
Mm.
They're huge animals, by the way.
They're really big, and it's very good climate, and everybody's got stuff growing in their yards, so they eat like kings. Yeah. Like one of them was so fat that it. Well, A, it couldn't really fly, but it got this like long glide going, and it landed in a tree that we have in the backyard, and the tree branch snapped.
Yeah. Oh my god!
It was
that is a fat fucking peacock.
Oh.
Yeah, it's probably like a. It was probably like a 40-pound bird.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a big bird.
It's entering. That's a beautiful. Those are beautiful birds, but that one is entering the sort of like late Elizabeth Taylor era, the White Diamonds era.
Decadently fat, just gorgeous plumage. Yeah,
but decked out in jewels, just emeralds, diamonds.
Do they taste good though? They don't.
I would
they
like
don't,
to find
right?
out one day. I would like to find out. There's a lot of people who like. I've looked it up. It's mm-hmm. there are people who have done it. And they say it tastes kind of like a gamey goose.
Oh, wow. Right. Okay, so they're good. Said, yeah. Goose is good.
Goose is delicious.
Yeah.
Goose is amazing.
It's a really fatty meat.
That's like, it's a Taiwanese specialty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
are there laws about just like killing them?
There are. It's so strict. Fuck. And
that's a negatory.
It's like a, yeah.
So you can't do it. You got to like.
Yeah, if you hit one with a car, you know, you face a huge stiff penalty. It's a misdemeanor charge. Yeah.
I can imagine, like, that huge fat peacock, like, breaking your branch. And you run outside to hear, like, what the noise is all about. And it just throws, like, two diamonds at you. And is like, these always brought me luck. And then it tries to flap away, but it can't really get off the ground.
Oh, man. No, it was sad. It was, like, waddling.
Escape from Plan A.
I told you that story to tell you this one.
Out to my G. Love sick like a dog with canine sensitivity. Developing this new theory of relativity. Connecting a soul's resting in captivity. Positive life sacrifice what it is to be our history. Only a quarter of a century. Reality sitting on the shoulders of our chemistry. See, ain't no mystery. The colors that we mix
to set
the
another episode of Escape from Plan A. This is Teen. I we should make sure that everyone knows what our voices are, because I keep hearing people don't know our voices. So I'm Teen, and I've got Mark with me. Mark, let him
How
hear
guys
your voice.
Doing? This is my deep baritone.
Very nice, very nice. And of course, Jess, who's unmistakable.
Yeah, I'm the woman.
Right, there you go.
She is.
Okay. So we wanted to talk a little bit about, I guess it's a general but also very important and kind of major pattern that's happening in America but also around the world, which is the precipitous decline in marriage rates. I think the statistic now is something like less than 50% of American adults are married now. And that is the lowest I think it's basically ever been. That's down from a high of like 70%+ in sort of the 60s and also again in the 80s. So that's happening. And at the same time, people are getting married much later. Both men and women are waiting almost till about the age of 30 to now get married. I just, as a starting point, I was like, you know, I can see that happening. I can kind of sense that that's happening out there, especially with millennials and the sort of like troubles that they're having and dating and stuff. So I just wanted to, how does this factor into the life of young people, and is that something that you yourself are seeing out there?
I'm gonna say yeah, it tracks very. I read the studies and I read the pieces that were written about it when it came out. I think the Atlantic covered it. You know, all the major publications have touched on it at some point. I think this year was kind of like a banner year for some studies that came out to really that did like 10-15 year demographic studies.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say I wasn't surprised, because it tracked really, really well with my own experiences. I'm in my early 30s, and I remember in my like mid to late 20s, between I think about 26 to about 28, was a bumper crop of weddings. Like every year I'd be going to so many weddings. And then there was a little lull. And now I'm starting to see another wave of weddings among my like people who are slightly older than me, like people in their like mid late 30s.
Right.
Like there was a little lull in between where no action was really going on. And now I'm seeing that slightly older wave of people hooking up, and they're very different demographics. In the late 20s crowd, that was very much people who, the stars had to align for these couples, I feel like. Like, these were people who met their partners at just the right time. Like, maybe they were high school sweethearts. That was some of them. Sometimes they were people who met in college or grad school. And then it just worked. The timelines meshed together well enough for them to make that decision at that time. That's kind of like, quote, the normal frame of things, right? It's still on the older end.
The sweetheart marriage.
Yeah, like it's still on the spectrum of like quote normal, like what our parents and our grandparents would roughly see as normal, if a little bit delinquent.
Right. The archetypical.
Yeah.
Arc.
And it made a lot of sense to me that, you know, of all those couples, those were again people who all met in that same life situation. So in college, in grad school, at work. So it made sense that they were both parties who were of the same caste, because it's not really about money necessarily. It's not about how much. It's not, you can't really make a correlation between if you make over say 250k a year, you are X% likelier to get married. It's more about professional caste. You are in that white collar demographic. And this became a marker of belonging to that demographic. When you're kind of preparing to raise a family, you're anticipating, you know, career advances, you know, property, all that. So it made sense to kind of secure that at a good enough time. And the people who are now that I'm seeing who are now getting married, people in their later 30s and like 40s even. Those are the people who, for whom, like, they, like, it didn't work out, right? If they met someone in college, they broke up, there was a long, you know, they just didn't find the right partner professionally, you know, they were still getting their footing. I know a lot of couples break up, you know, they meet in college, but grad school takes them in different places or work or whatever. And for some reason or other, like, their 20s were dedicated mostly to their careers. And then now, and then once they got to a stable point, usually in their early 30s, that's when they took up the search for a partner. So for these people, this is right. This is what I think the piece in The Atlantic was talking about, like marriage as a capstone event more than like,
it is.
Like, it's not the first step the way our parents or our grandparents and generations past would have used it, where you get married to start your adult life. That's your entree into adulthood. These are people for whom like everything, they figured it all out. It's just... some of them even have kids already. So it's just it's more like closing off youth more than starting adulthood.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about how like they might have had a college sweetheart or maybe even a young adult relationship that might have gone on for a few years, but it sort of ended because of life circumstances, whether it might be more education or like job circumstances. And I feel like that's very modern. Like that breakage in that relationship wouldn't necessarily have happened in the same way in our parents or grandparents' generation. Like there not as many people went to graduate school, so like they were done with college. Or you had your job and you weren't as geographically as mobile, right? And you had that person and then you got the job and that was just it. And there wasn't as much of a chance where it was going to break because that person graduated and then they would go somewhere else to work. And maybe you couldn't do that. I mean, that's just the way I'm thinking. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, you're absolutely right.
Like it's a
and
modern thing.
I have a question. Okay, like, what do you think is happening? Let's talk about the ones that maybe aren't getting married, right? Do you think that's being driven by men not wanting to get married or by women not wanting to marry the men?
Well,
because
I think it's both.
It's both. I'm talking about, you know, like mobility, right? Like having to move, you know, going where life takes you. That's
right.
Pretty much a hallmark of young adult life, right? The one key distinction here is that now it's both genders facing that kind of pressure. Because I remember in undergrad, this was just a random conversation I had with someone who'd been working at the school for a really long time. And he was talking about how in the, like, up till like the 70s and even 80s, like family housing on campus was, you'd often see like married undergrad men, right? Like they married at 18, 19, took their wives with them to college, right? So family housing was for them. And women weren't so much part of that equation. But whereas now, like at that same school, one generation later, family housing is for like married grad students, right?
Right.
And so we already see just in that one example, like you already see that delay in age and you also see that demographic shift where... women are also pursuing these same tracks that take them all over the place that disrupt their lives. It's not so simple as, you know, like you find your husband at 20 and then you go with him wherever he's
right.
Going.
And you're not going to school too, right?
No,
but
that's not consistent with the data, right? The data is saying that if you're for the educated ones, they're still getting married at the same rates. They may be putting it off. But what about the ones who just aren't getting married?
Like period,
right?
Like lifetime. Non-marrieds? Or are you including the people who eventually do go on to get married just somewhat later?
The ones for whom marriage has become less likely, right? Because for the educated, it's about just as likely as it ever used to be. They're getting married later.
I
guess what I'm trying to tee up is, like, let's just take sides here for a sec. I get the feeling that a lot of guys want to get married, but the reality now of the modern economy is that it's not, like, for a woman, I just feel like marriage is not the agreement that it used to be. It's not like the setup it used to be. It's not like it's going to bring a ton of financial security, right? It's not like she doesn't have, like, for a woman, I feel like if she gets married, she's probably still just going to have to continue doing everything that she's doing now, plus have to manage a marriage and then eventually, like, kids. But none of her former obligations fall away. Like, she's still going to be expected to work, bring in money, and all this stuff. And it's kind of
true.
Why would I take on this additional burden? Maybe to make other people happy, or, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's been an equivalent study done here. I'm sure there are, I just haven't seen them. One thing that comes to mind is studies that are done in Japan, right? And you kind of see bits and pieces when it's written about in the American press. They always focus really heavily on, you know, those shut-in guys. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
I know there's a term for them.
The herbivore men, or...
Yeah, the herbivore men.
Hikikomori or something like that?
Yeah, hikikomori. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But every time they gloss over the role of women, but sometimes, you know, a little mention gets slipped through kind of offhand, and I think it's really telling. It's those guys, they don't want to get married, but it's also a feedback loop, because a lot of women don't want to get married because of that same,
same
thing. In a very structured society like Japan, where women are still expected to, retire from work if they were working to go home and raise children. I know there was a huge, like, push by parliament to incentivize women to return home and get married and have babies, and it's women rejecting that.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So I think I think we're in that period of flux where expectations in this relationship are still, we know what they are, but we haven't quite come to terms with the fact that they're changing, and we don't really have the language to negotiate what a new version of marriage is going to look like for both genders.
This is all taking place at a pretty, like, abstract level. Like, we're talking about, you know, social forces and data and stuff. But what do you think is actually happening out there? Because, like, I talk to the people I talk to who women who go on the dating apps and stuff. Like, when they get really honest about it, it sounds like it's pretty horrific. Like, it's not that they can't get dates. They're getting tons of dates. It's that what they're telling me is that the selection of men out there is horrendously bad. And I'm talking in New York City.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I hear the same over here, and I'm in L.A.
Yeah, and no, it's universal, like man. It's universal.
It's an epidemic of bad dates. And, you know, honestly, I don't hear the same at all from guys, right? Guys will complain maybe that they're slim pickings or something, or they'll maybe complain that
the girl wasn't
receptive.
Slim pickings? Huh? Does that mean that, like, he's just not getting it? There aren't enough fish in the ocean, or there aren't good enough fish in the ocean?
So I think I probably have the most experience as a single guy trying to get dates in New York or on apps. And if a dude is saying they're slim pickings, that means that they're just not getting a lot of replies, right? So, like, there are plenty of attractive women out there. It's that, for whatever reason, that dude just doesn't get a lot of replies. They just don't get a lot of matches. So,
But when he goes on dates, I'm saying I don't hear a lot of guys saying, like, yeah, I'm going on these dates and the girls are just garbage. You know, like, I'm not hearing...
Yeah, you know, yeah. It's not. It's much less likely.
What they will say is that, you know, maybe the girl wasn't receptive, or whatever. But
yeah,
it's totally
true.
Different from what I hear from women, which is just like the quality of men, and just the awkwardness of the date and the weirdness of the guy's behavior and all this stuff. Basically, it sounds like a big horror story, and it's just like full of guys who don't know what the fuck they're doing. They feel entitled. you know, they just talk, you know, they're completely self-centered, all this stuff.
Right, right, right.
And I take them at their word. I'm like, it's I hear this consistently.
Oh, yeah, it's true. Yeah. I don't think they're lying. I don't think it's completely their perception of behavior is wrong. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure there's this, a little percentage of like them being tough on the dudes, but like 99% of it is probably spot on.
And I think that is very consistent with this idea that people are getting married later. And a lot of times I see, like, kind of just what you're saying is, like, they pretty much put off, you know, like, they pretty much put it off up until the point they just can't ignore it anymore because they have to have a baby, you know. Mm-hmm. And when you get to your mid to late 30s, you're, you know, and I'm 39 now, I kind of understand that, like, it's, you're, when both sides are like, look, I'm just really interested in having a family, then you can kind of skip a lot of the whole, like,
sure. Yeah.
you know, is he really, does he really understand me? Does, you know, whatever. They can just kind of get to the point. And I'm wondering, is that what it is? Is like, where we're meant to find so much, like, we're meant to find soulmates. And if you're trying to do that, it's just not. I don't know. There's some fiction in that. It's like it's just the whole setup is ridiculous, and I'm wondering if that's what's.
I don't think people are still holding out the hope of a soulmate. I think for women, it comes down to a very practical set of terms, and I don't mean that to sound too calculating or anything. But it is your life, so you do owe it to yourself to lay it out in very practical terms. It's that
for sure,
the potential
for sure.
cost of being in a bad marriage outweighs the goodwill to potentially tolerate a bad date for too long. Mm-hmm. So at this point, in you know where we are as a society and as a group, it's like the downsides of marriage are so significant that it's worth taking a step back and making sure that if we get married at all, it meets exactly the right criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedback that I'm getting from my friends, I've been off the market for quite a long time, in two long-term relationships that have both been long. So mm-hmm. I never was on like the dating scene or anything, but you know, I have friends who are on
I didn't think your definition of long-term was like a few months.
Yeah. Thank you. So the feedback that I'm getting, it's that they're terrible dates. And the ones that aren't necessarily flat out, you know, horrifically awful, it's just a lot of doubt whether this person can fulfill, create enough trust for her to take that risk, because the downsides are just so harsh. And I think there's a biological component to that too. I mean, women are the ones who carry the babies, and at this point in time, you know, we still do most of the primary caretaking and all of that. Mm-hmm. And marriage, it's a lot of work, right? So something has to be worth that compromise.
What's a terrible date like? Like, do they ever describe like what constitutes a terrible date?
Oh,
we're getting
man.
Into plan A advice.
Bad dates
now.
Come in so many flavors. Let's see. I mean, it ranges from straight up like oh my god, he basically like read off a pickup artist manual. Like there was a neg every five sentences. He tried to compliment me, and then he, you know, turned it into a backhanded mm-hmm. insult, and you know he just stank of the worst cologne.
Right.
You know, stuff like that's terrible.
It pains me so much. Okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
And there's other kinds of dates where the guy, if it's terrible, then you know it's like he lied about where he went to school and where he worked, and you know turns out
and his
he
height,
like
probably
he,
right.
Height, I don't hear so much. My friends are mostly Asian, and just height just does not come up.
All right, so they lie about where they went to school, probably where they
and
work.
One guy, this is a friend of mine who's an MBA, and she met him at an MBA mixer and then went on a date with him. And it turned out he had leased a Porsche for the date. Like, he had rented this car.
Just for the day.
Just for the day. Yeah. And she found out about this from another NBA friend who had hooked up with him. Or, like gone on a date or something. She's like this guy is a total poser. And, like it's not like we were judging him for driving a Toyota or something. It's the fact that he felt he had to go rent a Porsche for his dates. That was the thing that just was that's not happening.
I just wish that I could get in front of these guys and just be like, no, and switch them like a dog, what I mean is just tap them on the nose every time that they want to do something bad, just be like, no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you get you get other awful dates, you get the many assortment of bigots that you have out there, right? A friend of mine went on a date. He was super nice, set the right tone, but then
no red flags.
No red flags until it came time to pay the check, and then there was some he thought there was a discrepancy on the check, and then he just went off on the waitress, who happened to be like Hispanic, and was just that's when
you were going to go there. I thought that was going to happen, is that it was going to be some dude who abuses the waiters and waitresses and people like that.
Yeah. And so, it's like that Dostoevsky quote about happy families all being alike and what have you. Bad dates come in just so many different flavors. And the thing is, I don't think people actually know what a good date entails. Because a good date literally is just the absence of anything bad, right?
A good date is so simple. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's not a circus. It's not some rigmarole.
I would say, okay, I don't know this for sure, but I'm pretty sure that I've never been a bad date.
Might have been a boring date, but not a bad one.
I don't even think I've been a boring date, honestly. I think I'm a completely normal, fine date.
See, right? I don't even know what that means anymore. You say you've never been a bad date, and I hear, oh, okay, he probably never raped anyone.
I have no idea what the benchmark
is anymore.
This is what I'm getting at, is for me, dating is to me, you should actually want to be on a date, right?
Yeah,
if
true.
You're at the date and you're just you're trying to get through it, that sounds awful, right? To me, it's the date should itself be enjoyable, and
absolutely, yeah.
There is this level of interviewing. Sometimes I feel like people, guys take it, these NBA mixer types, it just feels like they're going on a job interview, and job interviews are never pleasurable, and you're trying to power through it and show the best side of yourself or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just feel like with dating, the number of shitty dates out there, to me, kind of poisons the well for people, because it's
100%, yeah, you're absolutely right.
I have to overcome an incredible amount of pessimism, being statistically just based off of what you know, which is basically nothing, just as likely to be a complete skeezy creep as any other guy in that pool, right?
Right.
And it's interesting. You talk to these people, and I usually try and just kind of, by the way, I don't date much, okay? But I'm just saying, if the date is even usually the topic will quickly turn to, my God, dating is such a fucking nightmare.
Inevitably does.
Yeah.
It inevitably does.
And that's where the tension comes in, because, it is a job interview. Our common shared understanding of what marriage is, it's the hardest job you're ever going to have in your life, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But it's that dance where, the expectations on marriage have gotten stratospherically high. And it doesn't help that now we're all encouraged to find our own definition of what we want in a marriage. That means we have no common language. So when you're sitting across from your, coffee meets bagel, by the way, I have no idea what that name means. Are you the coffee or are you the bagel?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea. I went on a date with a girl that was actually a roommate of the one of the sisters that created that site, and she couldn't answer the question. So
as the bagel, are sitting there, and your conception of what you want out of this could be so radically different from the person sitting across from you.
Absolutely true.
So I think it was a lot easier when there was that that very straightforward, clear cut message of what it is. This is about,
right.
You know, you find a base level of compatibility, and the idea is that you two are partners. You know, you're economic partners to raise children, mm-hmm. to aggregate some amount of property, and then pass that legacy on, right? And now it's a whole, and now all of that is still true. For I mean, as you can see from the people who actually do get married, these are, it always tends to follow property, right? Who stands to gain from property divisions, right?
Oh, you mean yeah.
And but there's also this other layer of like soft stuff added to it, like compatibility, similarity in taste and interest. And I always felt like it was like compatibility was a pretty, I get what it means, but it's also on its face kind of ludicrous to me. Like if you're a straight person, you're sitting across from like one of the most radically different people ever from you, and you're trying to find compatibility. Yeah. Like fundamentally, yeah. I don't know how to get past that. And I think this is a natural facet of like getting older. I'm pickier. I have my likes. Yeah. And my dislikes, my personality is probably not going to change until the day I die.
I would say that it's healthier to get pickier as you get older.
It is. So I'd say that the search gets harder as you get older, just from the natural circumstances of life. But mm-hmm. At least the preliminary data shows these are the relationships that last. Like I know,
yes, that's
the
true.
First of my friends who got married, it was like she got married like the day after we graduated high school. And we were like, oh my God. It made no sense to us at the time. Yeah, high school. So she was like,
she was 18?
I think she might have been 17, but her fiance was 19 at the time. So young.
That's too fucking young.
That's very, very young. That's a throwback. I mean, that's just.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the rest of us were like clutching our pearls, you know. I mean, I still hadn't gotten over, like, boys still had cooties. You know, like they thought of like interacting with one past like. You know,
were they religious where it was like they wanted to get married to have sex?
No.
I mean, their first kid happened like 3 months after they got married.
Interesting.
So I think it was, I don't know. I don't really know what all went into that. I mean, they were definitely having sex.
Wait, their first kid came 3 months after they got married. So maybe they got married.
Maybe
they got married because she was pregnant.
They'd been seeing each other like for a few years before that. And it was very much with an eye towards marriage. Like she was presenting herself as like a serious, like committed woman at that age.
Really?
And everyone else was just playing around with the concept. Yeah. Everyone else was playing around with the concept of boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. Or just like me.
This is really old school.
Yeah.
This is really old school.
Yeah. And I remember Yeah, what?
Was she but Asian?
That's pretty rare, though.
It is very rare.
No, not Asian. Rare. White.
She was not white. White Hispanic. White Hispanic.
Oh, interesting.
So her mother was also quite young. Like, I think when we graduated high school, her mom was still in her early 40s. So this was kind of just the expected template.
What
for
happened
life.
In the family? Wow, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
What happened in the family was this is how it worked.
Kind of, yeah. And this is just, there's no judgment. I'm not judging them at all. This is just, this was the norm that she was following.
No.
And it worked. Like, there was no coercion, definitely nothing of the sort there. Like, she legitimately wanted this in her life. And the rest of us kind of went to college. Mm. She had 3 kids, all before the age of 24. She's divorced now, right?
No.
Yeah,
really?
She is. Yeah. They started having marital problems. Like she followed him. Like he enlisted in the military. I think he was in the Marines.
Military dudes get married young.
Dude, they get married. What I'm hearing is that they tell the recruits, like, don't get married to your girlfriend. But they keep doing it, and then they all get divorced because problems happen because they're always deployed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we all kind of like, we were like, oh my God, we need to like do an intervention or save her or something. Like, oh my God, she's married. That's so gross.
Wow.
She's having kids. And then now we're at the point where her kids are like sentient people. She's divorced.
Oh, what? Sorry?
They're like sentient people. Like they're
They're teenagers.
They're almost teenagers. Yeah. And, and she's like, she got divorced, you know, like duh. But now she's going back to school. Mm. Her kids are going to like, she's going to have her life back. Like,
is she like looking for like a, she looking for a man now?
No.
Or is she going to be not. Like single mom?
Yeah.
Yeah, she got her degree.
Awesome. Awesome.
Her husband, ex-husband, like she used the money from her ex-husband to pay for her college degree. Like she's supporting them. Like she's a social worker, I think. And just enjoying.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And like she was last I talked to her was a few years ago. She'd been kind of casually seeing a guy, but she's like, you know, this time around, I am not in any freaking rush. I don't need a father for my children. I'm not looking to have any more of them. So at this point, this is all about me and what I want. So I can wait.
That's right.
And it's like now
she's a man
like
a fish needs a bicycle.
Yeah. And it's like, but it's like she had completed one life cycle before the rest of us.
That's crazy.
Like my friend, like the oldest of my friends are now raising their young kids, and she's the one like advising them about all this stuff because she already did it, but like 10 years ago, you know.
That's I've done insane. Everything in my life to avoid that situation. All my friends are my age, and they all have kids. Some of them have two kids. Some of them have kids that are people.
Right.
You know, that do stuff, that have like responsibilities because they're like 10 years old and you know,
they
like,
mow lawns and stuff. They're, you know, it's
they do stuff for money. It's fucking, it's insane. And I'm very, I guess like I'm like the polar opposite of your friend there. It's like, I have done everything in my power to, I guess after a certain point, I realized I was like, I don't think that I'm down for this, you know, and I guess what I'm saying is like, I can see the logic of people just saying like, I don't want to get married and I don't want to have kids for men. I don't know about women because I can't really put myself in those shoes, especially that pressure of having children, but like,
right. And that biological clock, right? I mean, we just don't have that.
The way I think of it now is like, I lived through the financial crisis. And I was very, very like in the, you know, sort of ground zero for that. And I just, you know, I have this weird, feeling of insecurity, even though I like do fine. Mm-hmm. And the whole world is like set up to, here's how I think of it. The whole world around us is like set up to push a family of four to the brink of paycheck. So if you're a family of four, that cost of, you know, the cost of housing and schooling, taxes, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's all designed to keep a family of four vaguely precarious.
Yeah, and that's true.
If you're single and you don't have a family, but you earn like you could be the head of a household, which I kind of do.
Yeah, you're in the money, man.
You're living life in easy mode. And it's really hard. And this is the thing. Like, people are... I guess for a man, I'm just like, what compels men? And this is, I'm getting to you, Adam.
Because
you're heading there. You know what I mean, man? And, you know, we hang out, and I don't think you and I see things radically differently.
True.
You know what I mean? And we've had very similar experiences. We've both been married before.
Yeah.
And I want to know, what is it that's compelling you? And, you know, we'll leave your fiance out of this because she's a wonderful woman and all of this could be explained.
She is amazing.
You could just explain this by just saying her name, okay?
Yes.
But let's talk about it abstractly. So
You
know what I mean? Why is it? I mean, I've laid out why I think that marriage is and kids is not a bad idea, but a hard idea. And I want to know what makes you ready for that challenge.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't want to go like through my whole life story because that could take a long time. But I was adopted. And I think because I was adopted from Korea to America and just what that means and how that affects you, you can go one of two ways, I feel. You can feel that family means nothing and you never want to have it because it was never something that was very constant. Or you can go the opposite way and say that family is very important and you want to have that of your own. And I'm very much of that second way, where I was very lucky to have a very to have an amazing adoptive family. And
so you've always felt that way?
Always. And I was also adopted with my biological brother. So I know a lot of other adoptees out there are adopted alone, mm-hmm. meaning that they're not adopted with a biological sibling.
I mean, were you thinking about that when you first your first marriage?
I was. I mean, my first marriage, my adoptive father was very sick, and it was I was like 28, 29. I'm the older sibling.
So you had sort of a family crisis happening in your
yeah
in the background, right?
Yeah, I did.
Loss of father.
Yeah, and like I felt this obligation and this responsibility to get married and possibly have children. And carry on the name, maybe okay. not biologically, but in spirit and
no, I hear you.
Legally, right?
And it's also, like evidence. Like, was it like evidence to him that you know it's going to carry on the family?
Yeah. Like I love my father.
Yeah,
and I'll try not to get the cry, but like
your dad was a pretty good looking dude, by the way. I saw the.
Oh, my dad was a very good looking guy.
Yeah,
and but
you don't have his genes though, so I can't.
I don't because I'm not near. I'm not a blonde haired, blue eyed, tall white dude. But like you know, like,
but you
my
are
dad
Jewish,
meant
so you know, you
and I and I wasn't
you.
Jewish. But
oh yeah, that comes
you know,
from
my
the
dad,
mom.
But like so, my you know, my dad meant so much to me, like so much to me, and I wanted him. Well, he was sick, and I wanted him to know that I'd be okay in every way, right? Like
sure.
professionally and I just, you know, relationship and family.
That's important. My dad had a brush with death before.
Yeah.
And that was the first thought that came to his mind. You remember he's fine, luckily, but he told me it was cancer, and he was like, first thought that came to his mind was like,
yeah,
all right, the kids won't die. If I'm not here, they'll have they seem to be on their way to some sort of
absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Some kind of existence, yeah.
Yeah, so like I you know, for me, but also it was like a combination of that and just family was always very important to me. And sure. I always knew in my mind, no matter how much playing around I might do, and I was never a guy that initially wanted to do that kind of stuff, but like I always wanted to have a family. I wanted to have kids. I wanted it because I think it was just something that it was never stable for me.
So it's a question of priority, right? Like you're coming into this with the priority being underlying all of it. When yes. you're out dating, you're yes. thinking about this.
Yeah,
the
yeah,
purpose
yeah.
of all this.
Absolutely, I am. No matter, you know, I got divorced. And I'm like, I'm gonna go out there and put myself out there. I'm gonna have some fun. But always, even like right after I got divorced, always in the back of my mind when going on these dates with women, was she someone that I could see myself with longer term? And once I made once the switch was turned on and off, on or off, I would act maybe a little differently. I always acted, you know, like you know, I wasn't a bad guy, but like. I would act differently. And, you know, so it was, for me, it was always, I was always looking for that next step, the woman that I could be with long term. And thankfully, you know, after I got divorced, I wasn't just looking for anybody. And I had those things I had to have and the things that I couldn't, you know, I couldn't tolerate. And I found an amazing woman. We're going to get married very soon, and, you know, I hope it lasts for a long time, and we're going to we love to have kids, and so, yes, but, yeah, I always had that in the back of my mind. It was just a priority for me.
So I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Do guys have any kind of sense of, like, timeline for when they want to achieve think some these like do. Benchmarks.
I do. I did. Yeah.
I do. I want to be able to, when my kids are a little older, at least do a little bit of the roughhousing, a little bit of sports, move around with them. I don't want to be like 70 years old and like I can't go and run around with my kids. So, you know, you have to get married. It's a little, depending on how fit you are, there's a little bit of a timeline for that.
I would say, yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, no, elaborate the question. I want to know what's driving the question.
Because just in talking to my friends, right, and they're like when they decompress after a date, especially if it went badly.
Sure.
You know, kind of some of the like the meta theme that comes out is like men not being able to accept that they are on a timeline, because I mean, I can't speak for them, of course, but it just happens so
that's
often.
That's me.
Yeah, some dudes. Some dudes. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's all like societally, we all have. I mean, we all know enough about the stereotype to laugh at jokes about women wanting to get, you know, married by 30 or, you know, babies by 35 or something. And this is reinforced, mm-hmm. right? Like, you can't go a month without some study coming out about, oh, yeah, women, your eggs are just going to rot and fall right out at the crack of 33. So, you know, chop, chop. And that kind of like that kind of breeds this sense of like if not urgency, then awareness that there are certain points where you have to make a very tough decision with yourself, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think that's it seems like men do go through that thought process, but A, they feel kind of alone, like they might be the only one to be thinking things that way. I know they're not, but it's like there's no conversation around it. There's no conversation to support like a man saying, you know, I definitely want to have kids by 35 or something. Like nothing so concrete as that. It's always a little bit more amorphous and more like.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think one of the problems when I found myself sort of like, quote, back on the market, I had never gone on an online date until about a year ago. Right. I had always met my girlfriend. I met my wife, my ex-wife, just sort of naturally. And I always found the idea of this, of the app thing kind of bizarre and weird. Like, you know, to me, I think for young people now, they look at the apps and they're kind of like totally socially normal. Whereas for me, I saw the beginning of these apps. I knew some of the people in that industry that were like, this is online matchmaking. It was weird. You know what I mean? And to me, matchmaking in my mind always seemed to be like something that you would just like do like once or twice. Like you don't go and hang out you don't go to the matchmaker every day to see like who you're going to date that day. Right. Matchmaker should be like a service that you use like once or twice or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
And the apps morphed from OkCupid, I think, still had this sort of like online matchmaker kind of thing where it was like, we're trying to get you onto the service and then out as quickly as possible. That would be our definition of success, right? But now it's like these apps are chronic. They're like chronic apps and they become a lifestyle. And especially with something like Tinder. Yeah, Tinder's, I mean, that's what I see,
Tinder's
man.
Tinder's changing, by the way.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, I know young guys who are chronically dating, and they say that they're looking for something, but you know what they're really looking for? They're looking for, they're looking for sex. Like, I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, and so it becomes the app becomes something that just melds into your lifestyle as sort of like a chronic presence, and I just found that to be really disturbing.
Tool. It's on its face, like, yeah, you use it to find a partner, but what it really does is it kind of reinforces your position in the social hierarchy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's self-validating for sure.
Yeah, and I think this is where also, like, gender identity plays out, right? You typically, I mean, when you're trying to, I mean, let's face it. The idea of being on these apps is it's flattering to be liked by many people, right? So, and
it
I think
be,
there's
yeah,
this
for like,
there's this assumption in the back of people's heads, like they're trying to triangulate that proper signal to attract as much bees to your honey, your pollen.
Yeah, but
as
for the guys that I know, But for the guys that I know, it's also just the fucking bonanza of girls to, like, it's like pulling a slot machine. You never know what you're going to get, and sometimes you get quite lucky, and there's small payoffs, and there's big payoffs, but they're fine with the small payoffs, like, all, you know, regularly. And you get a culture where it's just, especially in a big city like New York, where you're never going to really, like, you're never going to run out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so when I was thinking about how dating had become this sort of slot culture, slot machine type situation, I started realizing maybe that's why guys have like timeline problems. To get back to your original question, is like,
yeah, that, the FOMO stuff.
The app is a very repetitive use thing, you know, and it's not meant for you to. The app doesn't seem to me to have like a specific place in the timeline, kind of like a traditional matchmaker would just have like one slot. It just kind of goes with you through the whole thing. And so I find that if, I don't know, when I think about this, I see the way the guys approach it. And then I hear the girls say, man, I can't find myself a quality guy. The guy is just playing the odds. And the girl is like trying to use this as a matchmaking thing. Like, I want to find a good guy. And there's just a real mismatch there.
See, I think we're incentivized to not be true to ourselves. I mean, that's the cliche advice. And everyone tries to follow, but they're trying to put forth a vision of themselves that they want the other person to find attractive. And this is where we also add to that layer of misunderstanding. Because I know a friend, like a few years ago, she went on this really terrible Bumble date with this dude. Like, total asshole, bro, whatever. And then like it didn't go anywhere. After 3 dates, she did sleep with him, and he ghosted her. Okay.
I thought Bumble was supposed to like screen out those bro dudes.
Doesn't.
They keep getting through. But I think they just keep getting through.
Here's the thing.
I thought
like,
they were supposed to.
A few years after that, she ran into him like at a different sort of thing. Like a different event. Like I think they were in the same alumni circle or something. Like she just ran into organically. And and I don't know what this says about either of them. They both forgot each other. Like we only realized this in the and like she actually connected with him, right? Like it was an organic
thing.
Yeah. Like she was talking about like really connecting with this guy and what have you. Like they're gonna go get coffee and it was amazing. And then it took another one of my friends to be that guy looks familiar. And then
that's super interesting.
And then like so we dug around and then like she had actually hooked up with him like a couple of years earlier.
That's so
interesting. And wrote him off as this like total like bro, and he had put on put on this act, right? Like he had changed the way he dressed and talked and the things he decided he wanted to present as interesting about himself. So there's that total mismatch between what we think is attractive to other people.
And what's actually attractive to people.
And it's
no, but I think that he's, but I it's, think, but he wouldn't do that unless there was an incentive because
that's
think that
that's true.
He does that. I think because if he's playing, you know, these
he's
apps,
the
they just,
odds.
They, yeah, he's playing the odds. Exactly. And
he's
it's like
the odds
going
of what
to
worked.
Yeah. Well, he's going to put on, you got to put on game face, you know, like you, and it doesn't matter if one particular, see, this is what bothers me. It's like, it doesn't matter whether one particular date goes bad or not. You're playing odds. And so it's the ultimate commodification. Yeah. Women come through and it's just like, am I going to get lucky or not? And there's no sense of like, it's extremely dehumanizing. I guess that's what I'm saying.
For
it's extremely
parties,
dehumanizing.
Though. For and both I felt, parties.
For both parties, for me, I felt when I started seeing how the app worked, there's so many women. But you know what happens? You start seeing patterns. Like, for example, I started seeing like there's an incredibly high number of single South Asian doctors in their like sort
men
of
men and women.
Mid. Well, I can't see men, but but. Yes, women in their mid-30s. And I kept seeing the same profile, like, over and over. You know, that's just one example. But they would fall into categories. I would see, like, sort of, like, you know, international students from China that are at like, either FIT or Pratt over and over again.
Well, yeah, you know? At CMB, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I would see I would see like white Jewish women in their like late 30s that worked for media over and over again. And it just becomes like that. You basically see an app that's giving you like four or five different archetypes, you know, because the algorithm's doing its thing, right? And it just, you just see like how many people fall into the same category, and it's almost like you're seeing too much. It's almost like you shouldn't actually be seeing that many profiles, because it just sort of, seeing that many people all together kind of it removes a certain human depth to there, and then you're just it's like the Matrix. Now I'm just like seeing numbers and stuff. And it was it was super depressing actually when I started seeing it that way, and I was like, I need to get off this app as soon as possible.
But so Jess, it's very interesting for me, that story you told me, because, and I don't want to get too much into like my pickup coach thing or like the fact that like I did that kind of stuff, but you know, I've been listening to the conversation you guys are talking and everything.
No, into it. You get into it. I want to hear how it works.
Yeah. So it's just like.
Also, for all those listening, you know, his audiobook is on sale. It is $79.99. Payable to me.
It's called Respect the Cock.
There you go.
That's right. But like, it just, you know, being involved at the pickup community in New York City and knowing the dudes that are in there. I would say that the majority of them are really looking for something more. Like, they're not there just to hook up with women left, right, and center. I mean, they'll take it if it's there, but they're not looking for that primarily. And that dude you describe who went on that date with that woman, your friend, and then met her a couple of years later and was just totally different. If I had known that guy and I'd heard that story, I'd been like, whatever you're doing on your dates, stop it. Whatever you're doing just like out in your life at these other events, do that more. And what that might, he might be resistant to it because he's like, well, I'll get fewer dates or whatnot. I'll be like, well, what's the quality of your dates? And do you just want numbers, or do you really want to meet someone you can connect with and be happy with? So, yeah, you know, I think
it's a tough sell.
And I think,
but I, okay,
it's a tough
but
sell because so many of them can do really well just getting.
But here's my point, Adam, is it's not that I totally agree with that, obviously, right? Like, I don't think people should go and put on, you know, game face when they go to a date. Like, that's just, that sucks. But
it's
the
stupid,
thing is,
man, it's stupid.
I think, but my point is that I think the apps are presenting a certain kind of, I'm being melodramatic here, so bear with me. I think it presents a kind of spiritual violence on men. I'm just saying this because I was so traditional in the way that I am still so traditional in the way that I think about meeting people. Like, I really think you should meet people through people that you already know. Like, that's just kind of how, you know.
Absolutely.
And
the pickup scene
to have
was
an app, like, basically funnel just all this choice at you, right? It actually does a number on you as a guy. And no, I guess I sensed it because I'd never done it. I feel like young people are acclimated to this and they don't even know what it's doing to them.
I completely agree with you. I think the feedback and the information that apps present to you can warp your perception.
Oh, totally.
Of how you want to act to attract women. Right. And you don't even start thinking about what you actually want.
I think it actually fucks up your it kind of like assaults your concept of what a woman is.
Yes, yes,
you know, because
absolutely.
It's really like that. Shopping on Amazon or something. It's like
absolutely,
you know, and
absolutely.
CMB. Think about the delivery vehicle. It presents you. It says it promises you. I'll send
and
you.
It does both. I don't want to just pick on dudes,
I can only rep the male side. And,
And
I can't even begin to describe what this must be like for women, but you get 30 bagels a day. That's what it promises you.
Well, I mean, I used it when they only gave you one, but like.
Okay, I got 30 a day.
Oh, no, yeah, no, they give you a lot more now.
And you look at it, and it's almost like Groupon.
Right. No, it is. It is.
You know, and it's like
I almost wish it would go back to giving you one. I wish it would give you back just one, and you've got to really think about whether you want to say yes or no.
Yeah, and then
I wish you would do that because,
and then afterwards it moves to this chat function.
Yeah,
and it, you know, I don't know. I just looked at this and I was just like, How is this not psychologically the same thing as like mail order brides or something? Honestly, like there was just something so highly transactional about it, especially for me. Because my favorite apps are like banking apps, and, you know, like I use it, Uber, you know, whatever. And then I have like a woman app. And then you have a woman app.
Yeah.
And no, I was like, this is a step too far. It's honestly a step too far. And no one's out there. I think people need to really start seriously rethinking online dating and how it works, app dating.
Well, you know, I think you're onto something. There was this study.
Go ahead.
It's interesting that you brought up banking apps. I know it's probably unintentional, but bear with me for a sec. For both genders, they presented financial information about themselves, not about any prospective partner, right? And then told them to choose a mate, right? And I think there is a definitely correlation there with commodification of people, because it turns out men who get a positive financial picture pick hotter women, and men who are made to feel a little poorer are okay with uglier women. That's what it boiled down to.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing for women, honestly. So I think it's
So the richer women go for hotter dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
And so it's interesting that there is that correlation. Like you are, that kind of means that that mental model you have of this partner is a commodity, like an asset in your portfolio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So it does exist on that same axis in your head.
Yeah.
Now,
maybe because I was never that rich or that good looking.
Now, the question that I have is that bad? And I have a harder time talking about this.
You mean the way that looks is it can be translated into like a monetary pecuniary value?
No, I'm talking about like actually being more honest about the commodification process that's happening here.
I think it's bad. I think it's bad. I'm very traditional about this. I think it's very bad. Because
see, I don't know what traditional means in that case, because I'm actually
I'm just like pre-app. Like I'm talking about an era in which you didn't really have a lot of market data.
15 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. Like basically the day before yesterday. But
the
yesterday. I guess what I'm saying is like the reason I think it's bad is because we never thought this way before. Never. Like, it's just never been this way. And
I think people did, but they couldn't enable it.
It wasn't enabled.
A few of my cousins in Korea got married through arranged marriages.
Right. Are these your rich cousins?
Huh?
Are these your rich cousins?
Yeah. They're older. Like, they're older, so they would be... Yeah, they were my first... they're the first people in my family's in that generation to get married. And it's the same kind of commodification, the same kind of dehumanization that we're talking about here, but abstracted one level up. It's someone else doing that for you. It's your parents. It's the matchmaker.
The traditional matchmaker.
Gobs of money to make this match for you. Mm-hmm. It's just that they're handling...
But they're taking more dimensions though, right? Like they're taking into account, you know, the social compatibility between two people. It's contextualized, you know.
It is contextualized, but it's like they're handling the dirty work. They're the ones vetting for finances, you know, making sure he doesn't have, you know, a messy divorce or debt or something, doing all that for you. So when you finally meet, all you are responsible for is that personal connection.
But that's qualitatively different than like, you know, I work on Wall Street, I make over, you know, $500,000 a year, and I want like an 8 or a 9. And if you're a 10, I'll put up with crazy.
But that's the dirtiness not even... there. I agree that it feels skeevy, but it's also like how much of that is because you are the one making those kind of calculated decisions self, as opposed to someone else doing that for you. That skeeviness comes from a concept of marriage that is that is upheld to be pure and beyond reproach and beyond, you know, any of these quantitative factors. Yet we're still expected. It's just subliminal understanding that those quantitative factors do come into play. Right. Like that's what I'm getting at.
So what are you saying though? So you're basically saying the app is basically letting us do for ourselves what previously other people would be doing for us, and so we have more control over our lives.
And doing it worse. And,
yeah, and by doing it's quantitative. So we're because it's so quantitative and so transactional, we're nostalgic for an imaginary time when qualitative stuff was given more primacy.
By the way, this is a fascinating. I want to continue the conversation, but I think we've got enough for a pod. So hold on.
I drank the whole beer.
Let's do final thoughts and then continue the conversation.
Okay.
Any final thoughts?
On the marriage thing?
Yeah, we could go on forever, but I'm just curious. After this whole thing, I don't know, any final thoughts you want to share about just kind of put it this way. Observations about marriage, relationships, or whatever that you think really aren't being a thought that you have or a perspective you have that is not something that's part of sort of broader consciousness, the broader conversation about what's going on.
I think, you know, I feel that a lot of men out there feel pressured to go one way or another, meaning go full bachelor, go crazy, have sex with everybody, etc., or be only a family man. I would say, like, just do what you feel is right at the time and don't try to bamboozle anyone or trick anyone or anything. Be honest, and it might end up that you don't, you know, hook up with somebody or you lose somebody, and that's okay. And I know it's hard to try to accept that, but I would urge men to be honest with people in their lives, and it will end up all right. So I'd say.
Jess, any thoughts?
Dating sucks. I think uniformly, like for men and women, like the friends that I have, and I'm this way myself. Every time I talk to them, it's like, I wish we could just skip ahead to like the 15th date, you know? Like there's an, very everyone's true. Trying to like this, like the tragedy of it. And also the beauty of it in some way is that everyone seems to be wanting that, right? That kind of intimacy, that kind of letting down of that shiny exterior you put up, that your mm-hmm. estimation of what everyone else wants you to be, right? Which is always wrong. And just to kind of get mm-hmm. to that point where you're like just sitting on a couch, probably in something ratty and stained, watching a movie, and you can just be your grossest self.
Yeah.
Right. There's a sadness to it that it's so hard to find. Just find someone that you're willing to let those barriers down with. But it's also touching that that's the commonality. Like we talk about, you know, men taking advantage of women and women, you know, taking advantage of men, you know, rejecting and heartbreak and all of that. But like something keeps bringing people back to the table, right? So part of me keeps it's never gonna work, right? To just have some kind of dating standard where you do show up in like your ratty sweatpants and you fart at the table, right? That's unfathomable, right? But like, I don't know if there's a better conversation that can be had. This is probably like person to person. There's probably no like signal you can send out of society, right? To be a little bit more, to have the self-confidence in yourself, to reflect out what you see in yourself.
I think we are in agreement.
Right. like it's not about like, I'm me as a woman. I mean, if I were on the scene, I would be tempted to seem younger, to seem prettier, to seem more collected and polished. And like, I'm sophisticated and all of this stuff. And I'm only ever like half of that in real life. Right. But it would really suck to put that version of me out there because I know inevitably that's not the median vision of femininity and gender that we have out there that we are all conditioned to see as attractive and valuable, right? So it would really suck to present myself honestly and get that kind of rejection. So I really mm-hmm. do feel for the struggle, like trying to balance between the two and being very careful to not get more hurt than you need to in this process. So I mean, I don't know. I don't really have any like thoughts on that, except, you know, like Godspeed, really. Like, and I don't think in this entire like hour plus conversation, 2 hours now practically,
almost,
we never really triangulated what marriage does mean, right? We roughly said it's for us, at least, it seems to be about kids, about family and a legacy, right? But that's still talking about something other than who that part, your marriage partner is, right? Except in really practical terms. So maybe there's
another pod.
So, I mean, so we, as much as we tried to get away from the transactional nature of it, we did ultimately come back to that. Like, you want to,
I can tell you what I think it means, though. I mean, I think to think about what it means in a pessimistic way will actually, in my mind, help people who want to find that person. I think that people should listen to the pessimist as much as they listen to the optimist. And that's missing. Okay. I think that the problem with American culture when it comes to relationships and dating is it's all sugary, sweet optimism. And
I agree.
And you need a little bit of pessimism. And here's what I mean is you gotta, like, if you talk to men who are married with children that have been supporting a family as the head of the household for a long time, that are just grinding it out, they're fucking miserable, okay? And they do it because they got to. They do it because they love their children. They do it because that's what men are supposed to do. But it comes with a severe loss of freedom. So if you're like a single dude, see, you don't really quite value your singleness and your freedom enough. And what you got to do, I think, is kind of consider this very pessimistic view of life, which is you will lose what you treasure. So I think if you treasure, if you learn, if you're like a single guy, I feel like if you learn how to really love your freedom and the way in which your life is on easy mode because you got nothing to worry about and you can just pursue, you know, all the interests and stuff that matter to you, you can go to sleep every night not worrying about, you know, someone near and dear to you. If you can learn to see why that's something super valuable, you will lose it, right? Like, those things don't last, and that you're going to lose it because you're going to meet someone who, in your recognizing, like, your happiness at just being yourself and being alone, that's going to naturally project a certain kind of attraction, I think. Look, I don't know if that's totally true, but that's my experience, is if you value your aloneness, some woman is going to want to come and take it away from you. So that's if you want to meet someone, just treasure being alone because someone will come and find you. That's my cosmic view of it all. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think for women, like, honestly,
I don't think they,
like,
want to take it away. They want to enter your world.
No, that, but you see, yeah, what I'm saying, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And for women of a certain type in a certain demographic, what you have now is remarkably good, honestly. Like, it's the same as a single guy, really. Like, you have all your money. True. Your time is entirely your own. At this point, you know, we're so saturated with parenting knowledge. And I think this is what turns people off of parenting. Parents talking about that. Like, nothing is more of a turnoff.
I view it more as social engineering.
That's another thing, is that a lot of guys are worried that as, and this happens, you know how you say, like, the marriages happen in clusters?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
A lot of it, and this happened to me too, is like, you get worried that if you don't get married, you're going to be like the one guy without, you know, that's not part of the whole thing. Right.
And you have no one to hang out with.
Yeah. It's like musical chairs. You're done, man. Yeah. You're alone. Okay. What I've noticed being newly single, it's not newly single, but single again, is that, actually, the opposite's true. If you're the one guy that's like that doesn't have someone and you don't have kids or whatever, you're gonna get overwhelmed by your married friends at some point calling you to be out. Like, yeah, they're gonna unload on you, right? Because you're like, all my friends are unavailable. The one guy that's like a reliable hangout is whatever, and that becomes a pain in the ass in its own right. Right. So the problem isn't going to be that you're not going to hear from your friends ever. The problem is that they start calling you at 11:30 p.m. and, you know, whatever, from Florida or, you know, wherever the fuck they move to. And they start unloading their like personal shit on you. And
right, I think we started pod number two right now.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay.
Like, so, you're definitely not going to have a problem keeping in touch with your friends. They're going to come find you. I'm telling you, if you value your freedom, all the
don't get married. Men, your
guys, women, they're going to come and spoil it for you. Okay? So just if you don't worry about it, they're going to come find you.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Who wants to do the outro? I kind of think Jess would be good for it, no?
Yeah, Jess, you want to do the outro this time?
The outro is just where we say bye from Plan A.
Yeah.
Another great pod from us three here at Plan A. Don't take anything we say seriously. We don't know what we're doing. Please. This is a terrible outro. So please hit subscribe like on iTunes and SoundCloud. We're pretty much available anywhere pods are hosted. Please give us a review if you'd like and hit us up. We will put links to the studies, articles that we reference in the pod in the article associated with this pod, and also we'll include our Twitter handle as well.